Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're diving into something you guys have been requesting for a while now, the Gospels.
Oh, nice.
But here's the twist. We're not going to go full-on theology this time.
Uh-huh.
We're treating them like straight-up literature. So get ready. We're going to unlock how these ancient texts actually work, like what makes them tick and why that's so crucial for actually understanding the message.
Absolutely. I think it's a really fascinating way to approach the Gospels.
Yeah. Our guide for this little adventure is a lecture by Dr. Robert C. Newman. It's called Gospel Genres.
Okay.
And he throws out four possible genres. Like, what category do the Gospels fit into? Biography, propaganda, dramatic history, or are they just like a collection of random stories? And then he walks us through, like, okay, how do we figure out the best fit?
I love that. That's such a helpful way to think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
It is. Okay, so let's just jump right in. First up, the obvious question. Are the Gospels biographies?
Right. On the surface, I mean, they seem like they are. They're all about the life of Jesus, right?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely focus on Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Imagine a biography.
Okay.
That cares way more about making you a better person than getting all the dates and facts perfectly right.
Okay.
And that's basically the deal with ancient biography.
So if I'm coming to this, like, trying to read it like a modern biography, I'm going to be totally misled.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to run into some problems because...
The rules of the game back then.
Exactly. Different rules. Ancient biographers weren't, like, obsessed with this neutral, objective fact thing.
Mm.
They had a very different goal. They wanted to introduce you to this remarkable person, right? And then they wanted to highlight their deeds, their words, in a way that convinced you of their importance. And guess what?
What?
That's exactly what the Gospels do.
Huh.
John's Gospel even straight up says its goal is to make you believe that Jesus is the Messiah.
But hold on. If the goal is to convince me, isn't that a little, I don't know, manipulative?
Right.
Kind of like, I don't know, propaganda?
That's the next genre that Dr. Newman unpacks. And that's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
Because the word propaganda has a bad rap for a reason, right?
Right.
Like, we think about twisting the truth, fear-mongering, playing on your emotions to get you to think a certain way.
Right. Not exactly the warm and fuzzy feeling you want when you're reading about, well, good news.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, I mean, some people do find the Gospels a little preachy.
Sure.
How does that square with this idea that they're actually restrained in their presentation?
Yeah. And that's the really fascinating part.
Okay.
The Gospels actually show surprising restraint.
Hmm.
They let the events speak for themselves. They show a whole range of reactions to Jesus.
Right.
And they don't constantly bombard you with, like, judgmental commentary.
Like, they're confident enough in the story to let it do the talking.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool when you think about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It really speaks volumes about how they wanted to present Jesus. Instead of pushing an agenda, they presented his words and actions and really let the reader come to their own conclusion.
Okay. So maybe not propaganda.
Yeah.
What about this dramatic history genre?
Right.
It sounds a little intense. It sounds like something Shakespeare would write.
Right. Well, Dr. Newman actually brings up a literary critic named Roland Fry.
Okay.
And he compares the Gospels to Shakespeare's historical plays. Think about how a play uses storytelling and characters and these dramatic events to create this powerful impact on the audience.
And how all those elements work together to get across, like, a bigger message.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I see where this is going. You're saying the Gospels use those same storytelling techniques, but for, like, an emotional impact on the reader.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So Fry highlights a few key features of this dramatic history genre. Number one, it has to stick to the truth.
Okay.
Number two, it's meant for a wide audience, not just a select few.
Got it.
Number three, it needs to condense a big, complicated story into a manageable size.
Okay.
And finally, it uses these well-chosen characters and events to paint this really vivid picture of what happened.
Hmm.
And here's the kicker. All of these things line up surprisingly well with the Gospels.
Wait. Condensing a big story into a smaller space.
Oh.
I vaguely remember Dr. Newman mentioning something about books being, like, super expensive back then.
You're exactly right. He pointed out that books were a luxury in antiquity. So, you know, somebody like Josephus could write these massive multi-volume histories for a wealthy audience. But early Christians, they were trying to reach everybody, including those who couldn't afford these super expensive books.
So you're telling me the length of a gospel might be influenced by ancient book prices. That's wild.
It really adds another layer to how we think about the Gospels.
Yeah.
And it connects to an idea he talks about later, this concept of sampling.
Okay.
Where the Gospel writers had to carefully select the most representative moments from Jesus's life to get the point across in this limited format.
Okay, so we've kind of ruled out propaganda. We've explored this whole ancient biography thing and even dabbled in a little bit of Shakespearean drama.
Right.
What about this idea that the Gospels are just collections of stories?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a key difference from how we think of biography today.
Right.
The Gospels, they don't feel like a smooth chronological narrative.
Mm.
They're more like a series of interconnected stories, each with its own little punch.
So how does that change how we experience the Gospels? I mean, why does the structure matter so much?
Well, think about it this way. By presenting these stories back to back, the writers could focus on specific events that pack a punch.
Okay.
While also developing these bigger, overarching themes.
Hmm.
Plus, it allowed them to include all sorts of different content. Short, memorable sayings, longer teachings, and then those classic parables.
So it's like the Gospel writers were the original mixtape DJs, just carefully curating the best of Jesus' hits to create a specific experience for the listener.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Now, some scholars, they think that these stories were floating around separately before being compiled. But Dr. Newman suggests that the apostles likely used them as individual anecdotes while still understanding how they fit into the larger narrative.
So it's not just a random jumble of stories.
Exactly.
It's a deliberate arrangement crafted to make a specific impact.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm starting to see how all these genres kind of play a part.
Yeah.
But what's the best fit? What's the final verdict on the gospel genre?
Well, Dr. Newman's conclusion is that the gospels are primarily biographies.
Okay.
But with this unique blend of ancient storytelling techniques and even elements of dramatic history thrown in.
A genre bending masterpiece. Oh, this is so cool. Like, I'm beginning to see how understanding this can totally change how I read and interpret the Gospels.
Absolutely.
It's like having a secret decoder ring.
Exactly. It opens up a whole new dimension of understanding. And it leads us to the next exciting part of Dr. Newman's lecture, which is analyzing the specific techniques these masterful storytellers use to bring Jesus's life and message to life.
Ooh, yes. Give us the inside scoop on how these Gospels work their magic.
All right. So let's dive into a few of the most fascinating techniques that Dr. Newman highlights. Remember how we talked about the Gospels avoiding excessive commentary and spin?
Yeah, the whole let the story speak for itself approach.
Exactly.
It's subtle, but it's super effective.
Exactly. They let Jesus's words and actions take center stage. Then there's the masterful use of concise, compressed accounts, especially in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
Okay.
It's like each scene is a perfectly framed snapshot, capturing a moment in time with incredible detail.
Okay. I can see how those details would make a huge difference.
Right.
It's all about bringing those moments to life.
You got it. Dr. Newman emphasizes the concrete narration of the Gospels.
Hmm.
They're packed with vivid descriptions, sensory details, and tons of direct dialogue. It's like you can practically smell the fish and feel the dust as Jesus walks by. That's how detailed it is. And all of this makes the stories come alive and lets the characters, especially Jesus, reveal themselves through their words and actions.
This is making me think about those, like, epic movies based on historical events.
Right.
You know, the ones that, like, transport you right into the middle of the action.
Yeah.
That's what these vivid details do for the Gospels, right?
Exactly. It's like having a front row seat to the events. Now, we've touched on selection of materials. This idea that the gospel writers were super intentional about choosing which stories to include.
Right.
But there's another technique that keeps things fresh and engaging. Variety.
Variety is the spice of life.
Yeah.
How does that play out in the gospels?
Well, think about it. They weave together all sorts of content, action-packed moments, profound teachings, jaw-dropping miracles, confrontations, tender moments, and those powerful pronouncements that send chills down your spine.
Right.
This constant shifting keeps you on the edge of your seat and creates this dynamic, multifaceted portrait of Jesus.
It's like a literary tapestry, woven with threads of different colors and textures, creating a rich and intricate picture. Okay, I'm starting to see how these techniques work together to make the gospel so captivating.
Right.
What else is in Dr. Newman's toolbox?
Well, we discussed how the gospels are condensed accounts.
Yeah.
Possibly influenced by the cost of books way back when.
Right.
This connects to the idea of sampling.
Okay.
It's like the gospel writers are saying, hey, we can't tell you everything, but here's a carefully chosen sample platter to give you the essence of Jesus's ministry and message.
So they weren't going for an exhaustive play-by-play biography, but rather like a greatest hits collection that captures the heart of who Jesus was and what he did.
Exactly.
Kind of like those best of albums, but for a life-changing message.
Yeah. They offer a taste of his teachings, a sample of his miracles, a selection of his interactions with different people, and a glimpse into the opposition he faced. It's brilliant, really.
This is blowing my mind.
Yeah.
It's like they were creating these literary highlight reels.
Right.
To showcase the most impactful moments that would resonate with people for centuries to come.
Exactly.
Okay. We've covered a lot about, like, the overall structure and storytelling techniques.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the words themselves?
Yeah.
What makes Jesus' speech so memorable and powerful?
Yeah, that's where things get even more fascinating.
Okay.
Dr. Newman breaks down some key features of Jesus' speech, and they all point to this intentionality, this deliberate crafting of words to make a lasting impact. First, there's the aphoristic nature of his sayings. They're often brief, almost like sound bites.
Okay.
But they're packed with meaning and designed to stick with you.
Like turn the other cheek or love your enemies.
Exactly.
I mean, those phrases have become part of like our everyday language.
Right.
Like Jesus was dropping truth bombs centuries before Twitter even existed.
Right. And those sayings are made even more memorable through the use of structure and wordplay. Jesus often used Hebrew parallelism, which is this poetic technique where you repeat an idea in a slightly different way to emphasize its meaning.
Wait, so you're saying the way Jesus talks is actually like a deliberate technique?
Yes.
That's so cool. But hold on, you're going to have to break down this Hebrew parallelism thing for me.
Sure.
Give me an example. How does that work in practice?
Sure. Think of the Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
Okay.
See how the second part echoes and expands on the first? That's parallelism in action. It creates a rhythm and a sense of balance that makes the words resonate more deeply.
Okay.
And it's not just parallelism. Jesus also used vivid imagery, metaphors, similes, paradoxes, all those literary tools that make language come alive and stick in your memory.
It's like he was a master wordsmith.
Yeah.
Carefully crafting his language to be both profound and unforgettable.
Yes.
Okay. What other techniques did he use? I'm starting to see the Gospels in a whole new light.
Well, his speech is often described as poetic.
Okay.
And remember, Hebrew poetry isn't about rhyming like we think of it today.
Right.
It's all about using these literary devices to create a certain rhythm and flow.
So it's about how the words feel.
Exactly.
How they flow and resonate with the listener. It's like a musicality of language.
Exactly.
Okay, what else?
Another thing Dr. Newman points out is the patterned nature of Jesus' speech with lots of repetition and balance. Think about the Sermon on the Mount again.
Okay.
He repeatedly uses the phrase, you have heard it said, but I tell you.
That structure really hammers home the point that he's introducing a radical new way of thinking and living.
Right.
It's like he's challenging the status quo with every breath.
Yes.
Okay, this is blowing my mind. It's not just what Jesus said, but how he said it that makes all the difference. I'm starting to realize Jesus wasn't just a great teacher. He was like a master communicator.
You got it. And here's another layer that shows just how intentional he was. The fusion of genres within his speeches.
Wait, he mixed different speaking styles together.
Yes.
Like what?
Okay. Let's go back to the Sermon on the Mount.
Okay.
Dr. Newman points out that it includes blessings, character sketches, proverbs, satire, lyrical language, parables, teachings on prayer, and a whole lot more.
Wow. Talk about keeping things interesting.
Right.
It's like he was pulling out all the stops.
Exactly.
But how much of that is deliberate design? And how much is just the way people spoke back then?
That's a great question. And this brings us to the idea of structure. Dr. Newman argues that there's a clear artistry to the design of Jesus's speeches, suggesting that the Gospels are accurately preserving the brilliance and complexity of his original sermons.
So it's like those gospel writers were not only taking notes,
right,
but also capturing like the essence of Jesus's delivery. They were the original podcast producers.
I love that analogy. And, you know, there's one more crucial aspect we need to address. How these four gospels work together to create one harmonious whole.
Oh, the grand finale. How do these seemingly different narratives come together to tell one cohesive story.
Right.
It seems like it would be a bit like trying to make a playlist with four DJs,
yeah,
all vying for control of the music.
It's a fascinating puzzle, and it's key to understanding the Gospels.
Okay.
Remember, early Christians didn't have just one gospel.
Mm.
All four were circulating within their communities.
So they were reading and hearing these different accounts side by side.
Exactly.
That must have been pretty wild.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to think of the Gospels not as four separate biographies,
mm-hmm,
but as this fourfold harmony.
Okay. I'm starting to see the bigger picture here.
Yeah.
It's not about picking a favorite gospel or pitting them against each other.
No.
But about appreciating how they all complement and enrich each other.
Right? You nailed it. Each gospel fills in gaps, offers different perspectives, highlights different aspects of Jesus's life and teachings.
Right.
Think of it like this. You and I could witness the same event, but we'd each remember and retell it with our own emphasis and details.
Right.
That's kind of what's going on with the Gospels.
It's like they're pieces of a puzzle that fit together to create a complete picture of Jesus.
Exactly.
It's starting to make a lot more sense now.
And when we read them with that harmony mindset,
right,
we gain a much richer understanding of who Jesus was and what he came to do.
This is amazing. It's like we've been given a 3D view of Jesus, with each gospel adding another dimension to his character and message.
Right.
It makes those Sunday school flannel graph lessons seem a bit flat now, doesn't it?
It definitely adds a whole new level of appreciation. And, you know, this harmonious reading also helps us grasp the richness and diversity of early Christianity.
I'm not sure I follow you there. How so?
Well, seeing that there were different ways of understanding and presenting the story of Jesus,
right,
gives us a more nuanced view of the early church. It wasn't some monolithic, one-size-fits-all kind of movement.
It's a reminder that there's not just one way to be a Christian.
Exactly.
But rather a tapestry of beliefs and experiences,
yeah,
woven together by a shared love for Christ.
Right.
It's actually really beautiful when you think about it.
Absolutely. And that's a message that's just as relevant today as it was back then.
You know, this makes me think about how often we get caught up in doctrinal debates and theological arguments.
Right.
It's like we're trying to force everyone to see the Gospels through the exact same lens.
It's easy to lose sight of the bigger picture when we focus on the fine print.
Yeah.
But by taking a step back and seeing the Gospels as this amazing four-part harmony,
right,
we can rediscover the beauty and power of the story they're telling.
A story of love, sacrifice, forgiveness, and hope. It's incredible how a story written thousands of years ago,
mm-hmm,
can still have such a profound impact on our lives today.
And that's the ultimate power of the Gospels. They're not just ancient texts gathering dust on a shelf. They're living words that speak to us across time, inviting us into a relationship with Jesus and calling us to live lives of meaning and purpose.
This has been an incredible journey. I feel like I've made a whole new appreciation for the Gospels.
Yeah.
And the incredible artistry they display. It's like I was reading them in black and white, and now I'm seeing them in full, vibrant color.
It's amazing what happens when we approach these familiar texts with fresh eyes,
right,
and a willingness to learn.
Yeah.
And we're only scratching the surface. Dr. Newman's lecture goes even deeper, talking about things like irony, symbolism, and foreshadowing in the Gospels. We could spend hours unpacking those.
I know, right? This is making me realize that there's like a lifetime of study and exploration,
yeah,
to be done within these seemingly simple texts.
And that's the beauty of the Gospels. Mm. They offer something for everyone, whether you're a casual reader or a biblical scholar who's dedicated their life to studying them.
Yeah.
There's always something new to discover.
We're back for the final part of our deep dive into the Gospels as literature. And honestly, I'm feeling like I just went through gospel boot camp. So much incredible stuff we've unpacked already.
It is amazing how much depth we've uncovered by just shifting our perspective, like looking at these familiar texts through a literary lens.
Right. We've talked about genres and authorial techniques and those unique perspectives each writer brings,
mm-hmm,
and how those four gospels come together like an epic harmony.
Yeah.
But you mentioned that Dr. Newman dives even deeper, right? Something about symbolism, irony, and foreshadowing.
That does.
Sounds intense.
It totally is. And it's where the Gospels get even more fascinating. Like each symbol, each ironic twist, each little hint of what's to come adds layers of meaning and pulls you deeper into the story.
Okay. I'm all ears. What kind of symbols are we talking about here? Give me the highlights.
All right. So think about light and darkness.
Okay.
They're not just about physical light.
Right.
They represent good versus evil. truth battling falsehood. Then you've got water,
okay,
which often pops up as a symbol of cleansing, new life. And of course, bread, that's not just about feeding your belly.
Right.
It's about spiritual nourishment, too.
Mm.
And one of my favorites is the vine and branches imagery, symbolizing that deep connection between Jesus and his followers.
It's like the symbols add a whole secret language to the Gospels, like a way of conveying these profound truths that go beyond the literal meaning of the words. It makes you wonder how much we've been missing all along.
Right. And then there's irony, which makes the storytelling so much more complex and interesting.
Irony, huh? Okay, give me an example. How does that work in the Gospels?
Think about the crucifixion. It's the ultimate symbol of defeat and suffering, right?
Yeah.
But in the Christi story, it becomes the triumph of God's love and the path to salvation. It flips everything on its head.
Wow. That's a great example. It's like the Gospels are constantly challenging our expectations.
Right.
Showing us that God's ways are often completely different from our own.
Exactly. And irony isn't just about these big dramatic events like the crucifixion.
Right.
It's also used to expose hypocrisy and challenge those in power. Think about Jesus's interactions with the Pharisees. His words often have this double meaning that exposes their self-righteousness and reveals a deeper truth.
So it's not just about telling a story. It's about, like, using language as a weapon against those who twist the truth.
Exactly.
That's pretty bold.
And then we have foreshadowing, which adds this element of suspense and anticipation to the narrative.
Okay. Foreshadowing. Remind me how that works again.
Think of it as those little hints or clues that point toward something bigger coming down the line.
Okay.
For example, Jesus's miracles aren't just these displays of power.
Right.
They're like sneak peeks into his ultimate victory over sin and death.
Mm.
You see him healing the blind, and it foreshadows the spiritual sight he offers.
Right.
You see him raising the dead, and it points towards his own resurrection.
I'm starting to see how all these literary techniques weave together to create this, like, multi-layered masterpiece.
Right.
It's like the Gospels are a tapestry with hidden threads of meaning just waiting to be discovered.
And that's what makes them so endlessly fascinating. The more we delve into that literary world, the more those hidden depths are revealed.
Right. It makes you want to, like, reread them with a magnifying glass.
Exactly.
This deep dive has been a total game changer. Honestly, I feel like I'm seeing the Gospels with new eyes.
Yeah.
It's like I've been given this key to unlock a whole new level of understanding.
Absolutely. It's amazing how powerful it can be to just shift our perspective,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's like we were wearing these blurry glasses, and now we can finally see everything in sharp focus.
I'm already itching to go back and reread the Gospels, paying attention to all the things we've talked about, the symbols, the irony, the foreshadowing, those masterful storytelling techniques.
I guarantee you'll find new treasures with each reading. So for all our listeners out there who are just as blown away as I am, what's the main takeaway? What should they remember from this deep dive?
Well, here's the key. Don't just think of the Gospels as historical accounts or dry theological textbooks.
Right.
They're works of art.
Yeah.
They're crafted to grab your heart, your mind, your imagination, and pull you right into the story of Jesus.
They're like invitations to a journey of discovery, a lifelong exploration of the deepest truths about who we are and what it means to live a truly meaningful life.
And as you embark on that journey, let the wisdom and artistry of those Gospel writers be your guide. Let their stories transform you, inspire you, and challenge you to see the world through a new lens. Because this is a story that has the power to change lives, even thousands of years after it was written.
Beautifully said. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this incredible deep dive. Thank you so much for joining us on this adventure.
It's been an absolute pleasure sharing these insights with you.
And remember, the exploration doesn't end here. We encourage you to keep diving into the Gospels. Uncover those hidden depths, those little details you might have missed before. And most importantly, allow the message of those ancient texts to speak to your heart in a fresh, powerful way.
Who knows what you might discover?
Until next time, keep diving deep.